Welcome to the Industrialise podcast, where we speak to those leading the charge towards the future of construction. This week, Darren Richards, Director of Cogent Consulting, speaks to Richard Crosby, Director of Seismic. In this conversation, Richard talks about breaking down construction silos, the focus on process over product, and how industrialised construction can help meet net zero objectives.
Welcome to the Industrialised podcast, where today we're joined by Richard Crosby from Seismic. Welcome, Richard.
Hello, thank you very much.
So tell us a little about yourself, your background, and the work that you do at Seismic.
Well, I've been involved with the construction industry for many, many years now, too many to mention. In contracting consultancy forms, I've worked across consultants, clients, developers, you name it, across the whole range from concept design through to completion and closeout. Originally from, as a planner background, moving to project and program management in terms of doing that. So I've always had a passion for the process of construction as a whole, not just in its silo of construction or design, but across everything in terms of different procurement routes, all that sort of thing. So I've been very, very focused on efficiency and productivity in construction. It was only until a little over 10 years ago that I got into a position working with the Department for Education originally through a consultancy role that I was able to get that remit to look at broadening a supply chain and doing things in a slightly different way. And we did this because the traditional market wasn't, at the time, was not delivering for the Department for Education in terms of their funding rates. They were really struggling with suppliers. So it was the remit was to broaden this out. And I started looking at, I guess, what you could describe as the modern methods of construction at the time. We looked at volumetric, looked at panelized, and lots of different ways of how we do this. And that's when I sort of got the bug, I guess, in terms of into it, and applying everything I'd learned in terms of the process and how we can get efficiencies through a programmatic approach. I applied at a different level for the Department for Education, and then that ended up getting quite exciting. We developed a kit of parts, componentised solution for schools. That got attention from various people within the IPA, Keith Waller and others, to name some. And we managed to secure some funding. It happened to hit the right time at the moment. The Farmer Report was just about to come out. All this sort of stuff was happening. So we took that, and I got the bug in further and further. We got lots of Innovate UK funding. We got two different rounds. I think we got a number of millions of pounds worth of Innovate UK funding. We managed to bring lots of industrial partners together to look at what was, you know, how we can deliver more efficiently. And ultimately what I've spotted was I liked the site efficiency of the volumetric approach, but I didn't like how it was being executed. It was a fairly small scale stuff, and it was going great if you want to build a McDonald's or a Starbucks or certain things like that. But when you start to deliver bigger things, such as a secondary school or even a primary school, to that matter, it started to throw up other issues, and that's when I realised that actually what we could do with is actually cutting the cake a little bit differently, installing in a volumetric way where it suited, not where it didn't suit, i.e. where the labour was and how we could play around with that. And I played some numbers on indices, in terms of, you know, making things in lower indices areas and installing it in higher indices areas. Figured out at the time there was almost a 30% difference in construction costs between the highest and lowest indices within the UK. So it makes sense. That's a good range to play with from one rate to the other, but it had to be done in an efficient way. And I soon learned that actually once you start going building something which requires anything more than, say, 30 to 40 modules, you start to lose that efficiency and that program advantage that gives you some of the savings. So we had to find a way of speeding up. So we decided to, what we would need to do, we need to create a common frame within the industry, a common frame that almost took a few lessons from how a shipping container might work in terms of the ISO fixing, bolting it together, but going a step further than that, but enabling floors, walls, ceilings and roof cassettes to be manufactured in a two-dimensional form and then erected in a three-dimensional form at the right point for that project, and either in whole or in part. So you had full flexibility to suit. So if you had high intelligence areas with a lot of work to do in that, and you were delivering it into a high location factor area, then it makes sense to do it in that volumetric form, but not if you're delivering something in Hull or Grimsby, because it doesn't make sense to make it where the labour is, you can ship that labour. So it needed that sort of flexibility. And I like the idea of that, dealing with risk as well in terms of that, because that's when I came the idea of actually what we do need to do is manage the risk in the same way the traditional construction works, in that if somebody fails, somebody doesn't perform, we can bring somebody else in. There's always somebody else we can bring in to do that. And I was struggling with that within the MMC world.
So when did you have this epiphany, this moment of clarity where you went, I can see what's not right with the model?
It was a snap moment in time over about 10 years. Something that progressively developed in terms of doing that. And it got, and to be fair, we got a lot of support through various different government departments and the Innovation Hub at the time and UKRI, and they came up with this, it's a platform. Hence we got, highlighted in the product platform rule book as an exemplar, but we didn't know it was a platform at the time. It was just,
hadn't given it a terminology.
We just tried to deal with some problems and solve the problems. And that's what they came up with. But it went beyond the frame. We realised that the frame is the chassis, if you like. But to make it a platform, what we really need to do is have lots of interoperable components that anybody could make that match that chassis. In the same way as, anybody can produce apps for an iPhone.
Yeah.
That creates that platform approach. It's not controlled. And I describe, I oversimplify potentially the product platform rule by articulating a system is something where the value chain is tightly controlled by one particular provider or manufacturer or contractor, but a platform isn't, that value chain isn't controlled, it is there for others to use, and they're made interoperable, albeit within certain rules that can be applied to make sure there's consistency and interoperability of components.
A lot of similarities with automotive, the kind of chassis idea and the interoperability there. Was that an inspiration for the model that you've ended up with? Did you look at that industry in detail, or did this just organically evolve as you got deeper into it?
I'd love to say it was a plan, but it was just solving a problem one at a time over a progressive period of time. With hindsight, as we started looking into it, thought we realised actually we were not doing anything new here, and quite frankly what we realised is every single industry uses platforms apart from the construction industry. They all do it. The software industry do it. The automotive gets highlighted a lot. The aerospace industry, you name it, anybody within them, power tools,
oil and gas,
prime example, lots of different ones. Oil and gas, absolutely. They all use it. Why? What's so special about construction that it wouldn't work? And we couldn't find a solution. We couldn't find a reason why it wouldn't. There's lots of people who go, well, it's different, but we couldn't find any reasons.
Okay, good. So interesting journey, and the various roles you've had in construction over several years, all going client side, contractor side, consultant side, it's given you a very wide spectrum of appreciation, I think, for where the various stakeholders are. And I guess what you've looked at is to try and find the right blend, that isn't extreme in one extent and extreme in the other extent, I suppose. So you've got this model. It is the seismic platform. You're development of that has taken a few years to get to where you are now. What's the uptake been like, and how do you convey the benefits of this platform idea as part of the industrialized construction kind of toolkit? How do you educate and convince people this is a good idea? Because it looks like a good idea to me, but I'm from a manufacturing background. I've got an appreciation of what you're trying to do. Lots of other clients and contractors may not have the same view.
I think we've had a slow uptake, but we are starting to gain traction. These things don't happen overnight. And if you want to keep throwing the car analogies on the table, you know, Henry Ford failed twice. It set two factories before it got going. I think it took him, you know, it took the to replace the horse took about 30 to 50 years, I believe, something like that. I'm hoping it's not going to take that long, but we are starting to do it. It's been used now for a number of years on schools, as we've already stated. We've got our first residential scheme in the pipeline with a local authority, and we are talking to a number of tier one contractors. I can't say who they are for NDA reasons, but delivering some fairly interesting and large infrastructure projects with them. Primarily on difficult sites, difficult locations in terms of doing that, but it's starting to get an uptake. It's early days, but we're getting there.
What do you think the reticence is? Where does the reticence come from? Is it just that people don't initially get the concept of platform rather than system, or is it there's a little fear factor that this is so new, maybe radical to some people, you know, it's a big step, not a small incremental step? Where do you think the reluctance is in embracing that concept?
The construction industry is a very large industry. It's incredibly large, and it's broken into, as you've highlighted there, in many different silos, and people often operate in their silos. You're either a designer or a contractor or a consultant. So people don't see beyond that. How the manufacturing industry managed to break free is they describe it as breaking through the wall of between the design and the manufacturing process. And we haven't quite got that yet because of those defined silos in how we deliver construction, how we design buildings, and how we procure them. We haven't quite got there yet, and so people don't look over that wall and see, if I just did this, I could make this really efficient. If I could make this more efficient to build, I could have a more spectacular design, because I could spend it on an area of value, on the main entrance or the architectural form of that building. If I can standardise or find it a more efficient way of delivering the other parts of it. So there's parts of that. But ultimately, and I've given this a lot of thought over the years in terms of what happens, is the difference between construction and manufacturing is that construction, nobody can remember when construction started. People can it's almost within memory in terms of what manufacturing might look like. But from the moment somebody could pick up a stone and put it on top of another stone, the construction process would have been set at that point in time. It was using materials that were there and building it. And we've almost got just stuck in that rut of building in that sequence and that process in terms of doing that. And we're being used to drawing a picture and then saying, go and make that. You wouldn't see that in any manufacturing organisation, only in construction. Which is great to some extent, but it's expensive.
Yes, and a lot of the things you're talking about are true to the definition, are entrenched. You know, they are decades and decades old, and they are craft-based, I suppose, because that's where the industry's been. Yeah. And, you know, it's a difficult shift. I mean, it needs proper leadership, doesn't it, in certain areas. You know, some clients that have real faith and confidence in themselves to go and deliver it. And then people start to take notice, you know, and I think, unfortunately, the pace of change is frustrating. You know, I've lived a similar journey to you over the last 30 years. And, you know, we think we've come up with some great ideas. We've set up some great factories for some fantastic clients over the years. And they haven't been able to convince the clients to give them the orders to create the pipeline to make the businesses viable, you know. And you know, it's the clients ultimately. Maybe, you know, government is the main client that could make it happen. We don't know, but you know, it needs public sector clients to get involved as well, doesn't it?
It does, and it's very easy to say the clients have got to do this, but it needs a willing supply chain as well. And the structure of how we've got it is, you get, you know, you've got business models to get around as well. You've got lots of, you've got consultancy models who make money on reinventing the wheel every time. That has to change. You've got tier one contractors whose job is to manage the risk and provide the financial covenants on the scheme. They're not going to do that if they're not really being able to push as much as they can of that into their supply chain in terms of how they're doing it. So they want to rely on that supply chain in terms of doing it. So which is why actually we created the platform model of what we did, to allow the existing supply chain and the existing models to work a lot more efficient, but using a platform. So it's not using anything special. And what's one of the issues we had with the volumetric market was that everybody was saying, well, my system's better than your system, it's a bit special. And when I looked at this and we overlaid all the different solutions and systems, we found there's 100 millimetres difference. And yes, they were doing pretty much the same thing structurally with a couple of slightly different details. And we also found that the consultancy world, and I'm speaking as a consultant in many ways, try to overcomplex it. What we try to do is simplify it and do the opposite. We're using the same materials to build the same things. We're just looking to build it in a more efficient sequence. So everybody talks about technology and volumetric technology and two-dimensional technologies and which category we're in. It's the same materials. We're just putting them together in a different sequence and or in a different location. There is no difference. But there is a more efficient sequence, and there's more efficient locations depending on the project. And we help clients with that because there's significant value opportunities to be gained, not just cost.
Is there some misunderstanding around design freedom, standardization, which sometimes people fear? You say, oh, it's got to be standardized, repeatable, that we end up with cookie cutter buildings and we don't have that design flair. Do you think there's perhaps a misunderstanding of what we mean by standardization? We would describe as invisible standardization, you know, the component level. Do you think that still generates some concern in clients' minds or architects' minds?
Possibly. You usually get people that say, well, I tried this once 20 years ago and it didn't work, not realising how things have moved on. And if you cast, I mean, I remember you and I speaking, must be over 10 years ago now, when we're looking at this, and the market was tiny. I put a procurement out for the Department of Education through the Crown Commercial Services at one point out, and it was £30 million. And I got phone calls from very senior people within Crown Commercial Services, and these, you can't put, that's more than we've ever put through one framework in the last 4 years, and you're doing it in one procurement. I said, yeah. And that was 30 million. And look at what we're doing now. 30 million is peanuts now.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, you know, we can say, you know, what's the uptake of MMC and how far we've come. We are moving at a hell of a pace. In just that 10-year period, we've had, you know, back in 2017 was the procurement favour offsite. It's moved on massively. Everybody's doing some form of offsite or another. And they are learning from this, and we are seeing massive differences, but the real prize is yet to come.
Yeah, the scale's not there yet, is it? To,
but it's getting there.
It'll get
to that tipping point, and suddenly it's going to go.
Yeah,
and I think this is actually a warning to the whole industry. Really, is that if you're not on board with this, you're going to get left behind.
Yeah, you've got to be ready for what's coming. Effectively, so you don't see a tension between aesthetics and standardisation. A platform approach allows you to create buildings of distinctive shapes without losing the efficiency of the system or without losing the efficiency of the process. So there's a novel view there that you're taking. You're finding that clients understand your approach. You're finding it easy to convey what you're about from a seismic perspective.
I wouldn't say it was easy.
No.
But we are starting to understand what can be done. What we learned is that a lot of MMC with suppliers were saying, you've got to change your design, completely change your design to suit this, we can't build it. What we learned with what we're trying to do is by breaking every component down into a series of interoperable standard components at every level, then we can achieve mass customization to do that. So we can pretty much build anything. We just advise what the most efficient process is to build what they do, and because we can operate freely and independently and bring in the supply chain to need it, which is what the traditional market do, we're not relying on somebody that only builds boxes saying you can have whatever you want as long as it's a box, because we can have lots of different shaped things and do lots of different things. And the cost of that can be dealt with through the value of it.
So what's your approach to configuration tools then, and giving somebody metaphorically the platform and physically the platform? Have you got a software package that allows people to put in parameters of a building and ostensibly optimize that process as to whether it goes volumetric or panelized or a hybrid version, or where are you with that at the moment in terms of your journey?
We did try that a number of years ago. We thought, well, if we're going to have these, we can identify an optimized solution and we can create a configurator. And we did develop a configurator alongside with Brian Wood actually a number of years ago, which worked fine for when we had a set product, which was originally schools. In terms of doing that, but what we've learned over time is actually for this to really work well, we need to be able to use the same components to be able to build anything at different dimensions and sizes. So we've sort of understood the design, different design parameters of each component, so that that can be adjusted, so that we can actually still build anything that's been designed in a more traditional way. We can offer solutions to make it better value in terms of where they want to design and build more of it away from site or there, but tweak things. But it's only the client knows where the value is in his building, because he's the one that's commissioning it to do that. So it's not for us to tell where the client where the value is. We can bring it out and find the most efficient way of delivering that building to get the best optimized production process. So it's not for us to say, you don't want to be building that dome on that roof because, it's not a box.
Mm.
It's not.
If they want the dome, they'll get the dome.
They want the dome because they have value.
So you're very much focusing on process, not necessarily product, even though we've talked quite a lot about product. And I think what your view is, to kind of summarise it, is if you get the process right and you manage the process right, the technology and the component elements will fit the process. You're saying don't reverse it, don't come at it with a single product and a single method of building. You're saying get the process right, and within the toolkit that is part of the seismic setup that you've got, you can configure that.
Well, essentially, we haven't launched this yet, but we have been working on an AI tool to help us capture the commonalities of components in terms of what a client wants. We're using it internally at the moment as a test this out to do it. The initial tests that we've been doing have been very, very effective. And what's come out of this, and we're hoping to release it later in the year. Hoping we can time it for the industrialization conference, but who knows? To do this, but what we're looking to do it. The theory behind this and what we're trying to do with the new tools, because this doesn't exist on the market, is that there is more commonality in construction than we realise. We just don't harness it. We're looking at harnessing the commonality that already exists. We're all working to the same design rules. We're all working to the same laws of physics.
Yeah.
And the same usability and functionality of those buildings and those spaces. We design them around the constraints of those sites and the constraints of the brief and the constraints of planning to do that. But there is inherent rules that we apply again and again and again. And a bit like when I said about some of the MMC market, and we overlaid all their different systems and we found there's a 100mm difference, that's the margin of error of everybody working on the same thing with the same rules.
Yeah.
And the same applies in construction. So we think we can harness that.
Mm, that's good. I mean, I think the challenge is around, you know, how far you go with the thinking and the process, you know, because you could also argue in reverse that in terms of the whole life design for deconstruction, you know, circularity, all these things that are driving clients, you know, the system that you've got here that works as a platform, you know, is already future-proof for that type of activity, isn't it?
We did this completely by accident. Actually, we were looking at this, and when we developed the platform originally, we decided the whole carbon net zero thing was coming out and shouting louder and louder at us, and we thought, oh, we better do an assessment to see where we are. And what we realised is actually when you start factoring in reuse and ignoring the end of life part, so nothing going to landfill and reusing components, which again is nothing new to the rest of every other industry apart from construction, then we can save significant carbon amounts of carbon on reuse. And we got Swansea University with the Active Building Centre to do calculations on it independently, and they sort of blew us away a bit really, and they said we can reduce carbon by 70% when you take the whole life and end of life into account. So we thought, wow. So again, I wish to say we'd planned that, but we didn't. We found it by accident.
Sometimes the unintended consequence is a good one. Not always, but a lot of the time it is. So in terms of the evolution then, for your system and how we evolve this industrialized construction narrative, where are you going next? You mentioned about the use of AI to kind of harness the commonality, I think was the phrase that you used. That's going back to almost a configuration type tool under a different name, really, in many ways. What is your next step? Is it actually to get more out of the digital technology? Do you feel that you've kind of settled on the physical componentry now, and actually this is more about how do you get platforms in a digital sense that people can use? Or is it something else you're looking at?
No, that's all part of it, and these are tools to help us. But what we are trying to do now is just educate the supply chains and the clients and the consultants that there is a different way, and that actually it's less risky than doing it the way that they know. And this is a bit of a cultural shift. So at his absolute extreme, this is going to sound a bit fundamentally out there, which is why I don't often say it, but the process of construction that we use at the moment is a linear process. We do the foundations, and then we do the superstructure, and then we do the envelope, and then we do the fit out. And at each stage of that process, we create a barrier for ourselves for the next stage. It is hugely inefficient. We have to break components into smaller pieces. We have to build in a sequence that doesn't allow us to get the tolerances that you can get in manufacturing, which is critical to it all. And it's slow. Again, we are the only industry that builds in a linear sequence. Software industries, manufacturing, build in a parallel sequence. So they make all these components separately in different facilities to do that, and then they bring the components to site for final assembly at the last minute in the fewest number of parts possible. And that's the principles of DFMA anyway, and that's what they all do. But trying to get people to understand that they've been building in the wrong sequence is very difficult to do that. So we can control the sequence to suit the client's perceived risk appetite for it. So we could build a bag of bits on site if required to do that. So building in a traditional manner, or we could build it all flat pack somewhere else and do it. We can do mix match to do that, but we can harness the whole supply chain and deliver at the fastest possible. And the fastest we can possibly do it is 75% faster than traditional, just because of the sequence that we work. But people are a bit mind blown by that. So don't tell anybody. So please don't tell anybody.
We'll edit that out. So your real education piece that you're talking around then is to get people to understand PDFMA, the platform designed for manufacture and assembly, really is the message you're saying. You're saying, don't worry about how we do it and what the component is. If you get your platform design for manufacture and assembly process right, and you procure design with that in mind, bearing in mind that itself is a skill set, I think what you're saying is if you get that right, the system and the delivery model will take care of everything else.
Absolutely right. Yeah. But it's getting that principle of the fundamental process. This isn't a case of, oh, shall we use 2D, shall we use 3D? I think we'll do 2D because we did it before in the previous job. Well, it might not be right for that particular site. Or it might be right for some part of that building, but not the rest of the building. So going to a one-size-fits-all supplier to build everything in 3D volumetric, if it's not appropriate, is bonkers.
Yeah, I agree. So the education piece then, we now agree what we want to educate them in. How do you go about that? What are your methods of engagement? We'll talk about the conference in a minute, but you know, that's one method of engagement. But how are you going to go about this? Because there's a lot of them out there and very few of you.
It's just about doing it. We hear an awful lot of people about preaching we should be doing this from lots of people that haven't done it and haven't developed anything. Suddenly become experts in, everybody's an expert in PDFMA or DFMA or MMC or industrialization, or however you want to badge it, right? We're about delivering things efficiently and effectively and getting at better outcomes. And by that, I mean cheaper, faster, less carbon, or whatever, you know, what to suit the client's view of what value is. And we do that through breaking down the process and making it more efficient. We just happen to have come across a sort of solutions first that we do that, but we're educating, say, there is different ways of doing this. And traditional construction is getting riskier and riskier and riskier as the skills get less and less and less. So at what point do we have to keep paying more and more and more to deal with higher risk and fewer resources before that flips all of a sudden into new ways of working?
But is it going to require more case studies? You know, is it a bit of chicken and egg here? You know, you need to deliver some of these projects, gather the data, create the statistical evidence that's required, and then present it. You know, you're kind of caught between a bit of a rock and a hard place, aren't you? Because you need to demonstrate it does what it says on the tin, for want of a better phrase. But until you've got some more clients prepared to take a leap of faith, you're kind of a little bit stuck, I suppose.
Yeah, but this is every new way of working, and every new, not quite an invention, but a disruptive way of working has to go through this. There's a really good book called Crossing the Chasm. I forget who the author was now, off the top of my head. But what they say is that you need some early interested uptake to do this. And we've got that. We're getting that more and more now. Primarily because of need. It's been driven to it. Contractors and suppliers have been driven to this more and more. So it's progressively happening. We're not at that point of there's a critical point of uptake. We're not there yet, but not a million miles away from it. And we'll have a number of new examples where we've built that people can go and jump up and down, test it. We've prototyped it all. We've shown that we can use three different manufacturers in three different locations. when we prototyped it. I mean, we've shown that works.
And it's got great profile. You know, it's had a lot of really, really positive coverage, and you know, a lot of interest. You know, which is, you know, a testament to where you've come from, and you know, the determination you and your team have had to get it to that point. You know, it's got to push on to the next level now. So, I'll come back to the conference, because I wanted to just first of all thank you for being involved in the steering group, because obviously we shaped quite an interesting platform. I think a couple of days with very high caliber speakers and content. What do you hope to come out of that conference? If you look back on it a week later and you think we've had a couple of days where we've engaged with the right people in the right room, we've looked at a vision of the future, we've crystal ball gazed, what actually do you think we can achieve off the back of that conference?
Well, I think I can summarise where that goes. We do construction like we do it now because we've always done it that way. I would like to get a message across to everybody that there is different ways of doing it. And if I just get a few people thinking and questioning, why do we build in that sequence? Why do we do it this way? Why is it like that? You know, be that annoying kid that says why, which is what I was originally. It's just taken me till quite a number of years now. To do that, and so if people can ask themselves and question it themselves, and if they can't come up with a good, solid argument to put me back in my box, then at least try it and see what you think.
Yeah, and I think we actively need to encourage people to be slightly more bold as well. Yeah. You know, we're a very risk averse industry.
I'm not sure risk averse is the right way. I think everybody's risk averse. I think we're conservative, and it's just safer to do it the way that my old boss used to do it, because nobody got sacked for doing it that way. And it's just a bit of a conservative, safe way of doing it, even though we know it's not the right way.
But you know, we need people to have the confidence, you know, to be bold, and you know, there's always got to be somebody that's going to pioneer, otherwise, you know, the industry will never move on, will it? You know, so I think one of the interesting things for me as an opportunity for the conference is, you know, very much around one, ensuring we get the right people in the room, you know, those that want to partake in the debate, challenge you, challenge me, challenge the other speakers, because I think that's good, because if we can't rationalize a good, solid, cogent answer, you know, then we're on hiding to nothing. So, you know, I think it's good, strong debate from that, I think would be good. My other aspiration, you know, and hope, with all the effort that's going into it, and where we're going to go, is that we see very good alignment with government policy straight afterwards. We've got spending review coming up. We've then got national 10-year infrastructure program announcements and various other things all around the same time. And, you know, I'm hoping that the platform will align well with where government is going to go in the future. And all of a sudden, you know, this kind of stars align and opportunities open up that we can't quite see today. You know, and it'll be interesting to hear from some of the international speakers as well about, you know, where does the UK figure and where are we in the benchmark, if you like, on an international approach to industrialised construction. You know, and hopefully, you know, we inspire a few people to go away and pick up the telephone afterwards and say, Richard, come and see me about this, you know, and hear about your system. Yeah, that's the whole objective, I think, isn't it?
Absolutely, and I'm looking forward to hearing what others have got to say, because it's about bouncing ideas off and listening to other perspectives. Yeah. I'm not suggesting that by any stretch of imagination I've got the holy grail for everything.
Yeah.
We're always learning, we're always looking to do that, and I'm looking forward to getting challenged back a lot in terms of what I'm doing. To do it, to make sure I'm on the right track. Have I wasted the last 10 years?
I'm sure you have.
I don't think I have.
I don't think you have. I think you've thought about it. It's about having the tenacity, though, and the resilience, you know, and the determination to keep focused on what your end game is, you know. So hopefully we'll get some stars aligning. So I'd like to thank you for your time this afternoon. It's been a real pleasure to discuss the journey you've been on, where you are, where you're going, what your vision is. I think it's very different. It's a credit to you. And you know, to get your wider views on industrialised construction, some of the terminology has been good as well. So thank you very much for your time, Richard.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for listening to this edition of the Industrialised Podcast. This podcast was produced by Radar Media. The views expressed in this podcast are solely those of the guests and do not necessarily reflect the official policy or position of Radar Media. If you enjoyed any of the themes discussed, then the Industrialised Construction Conference is the perfect place to hear more from the experts who are dedicated to the advancement of the construction industry. For more information, head to www.industrialisedconstruction.co.uk.